You're listening to The Leonard LoPage Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The last three physicians I have worked for have all been murdered. I could not believe, my God, this has happened again.
Help save America from Christian terrorists.
Let those who reject truth, let the God haters, let the child killers see and fear.
This is the second death, the lake of fire. Abortionists are murderers. Therefore, abortionists should be executed.
Everybody is right when it comes to the issue of abortion.
By the end of 1998, it looked like director Tony Kaye might never work again because of his battles with New Line Cinema and actor Edward Norton over the final cut of his neo-Nazi drama American History X. But all may be forgiven because Mr. Kaye seems to have learned to control his infamous temper and because he's made a stunning documentary called Lake of Fire about the raging divide between the right to life and right to choose movements in America, a project he's been working on since 1990. And it received a rapturous reception at the recent Toronto Film Festival. It's opening at the Film Forum on West Houston Street today, and it brings Tony Kaye to my show now. Hello.
Hi.
Didn't you finance this project with your own money?
Yes. It seemed to be the only way to get the film made. Well, I knew it would be the only way to get this film made.
Well, what got you started on it? Is the abortion debate in America all that different from the one in England?
Well, no disrespect to England, there is no debate in England. It's one of the great things about the United States of America. I've lived here since 1990, and the fact that there is a debate on the issue of abortion is in my opinion a great thing. Not great when the debate becomes so heated that people react, but it's definitely a good thing.
In fact, two of the people in the film, Michael Griffin and Paul Hill, ended up murdering doctors who performed abortions, and you just had filmed them while they were engaged in protests.
Yeah, there's a few murders. I think about five that I've documented in the film. You don't see any of them take place, but I did document certainly one of them, Paul Hill, before he committed his murder, and Michael Griffin I filmed during his trial. It was extraordinary to be in that position.
Well, most people will assume that this film takes a position, but you have really balanced the full spectrum of views from all sides of the abortion debate without taking an obvious position. Is it true that you claim to not have a position on this issue? Are you the only person in the world who's not made up his mind for or against the right to an abortion?
Well, I'm not a commentator, and I'm not an essayist, and I'm a storyteller and a story writer, but I feel personally that I'm a kind of an empty vessel in a way that I kind of try just be open to let things kind of flow through me. Obviously, they take a form as they come through in whatever medium I happen to be working in, but. I would say I am very confused, and I think that's a perfectly acceptable position to make. When I decided to make the film, I tried first of all to do a narrative piece, and I couldn't really think of anything or find anything that already existed that really painted a broad picture of the whole issue. Not that anything can possibly do that, but that's what I wanted to fill out, that what I considered there to be a black hole in the world, that there was no film about abortion that really covered everything, that wasn't a propagandist. And I have no, you know, I have no nothing against the proper, you know, someone who has a point of view and makes a film to express that, or writes a book, or does a piece of music. I mean, whatever they decide to do. It was my concept, however, was to enthusiastically, in a journalistic sense, explore both sides. And actually, my choice of black and white film, I did that specifically because black and white film is not really black and white. There are other tones in it of.
So you're trying to suggest that there are gray areas in this debate, and that, well, and metaphorically, actually, visually, you're making that point.
Yeah. But that's not my point of view either. It's just that there just is.
Well, it's interesting that a guy who's so conscientious about not having a point of view on this has devoted so many years of his life to making a film about the subject. You say that you wanted to understand the word abortion the way Einstein discovered the equation of mass and energy in Lawrence of Arabia plan battles. Well, how does that apply to putting together a film documentary?
I said that?
Yes.
Well,
or something to that effect. That's what I read in one of the newspaper articles. You know, you can't trust reporters.
Well, you know, I believe when you work with sound and picture, you can find out all kinds of things. Particularly working with sound and picture over a sustained period of time, you can find out about all kinds of things that you couldn't necessarily do if you were just standing in the middle of an empty street. But or maybe you could, but that. So, you know, my purpose was also to try and be of use, you know, to try and be of use somehow. And, you know, I know you mentioned something of my past, my previous film, American History X, where I was very reactive. And, you know, I've kind of, I hope I've learned, you know, from the mistakes that I made back in that time.
Well, you've had a kind of a bifurcated career. You were famous for your commercials and music videos in England, but all your feature film work has been in the United States. And the projects that you're that I understand that are in the works. Is there a film that's already filmed?
Well, I've just shot New Orleans. I just shot a film in New Orleans that I wrote. It's about a number of people that kind of bump into each other 3 months after the flood. I mean, I'm a fan of American pop culture, and I came to America specifically to make American films. Because that's what I was a fan of. I had an assumption, not that you should ever have any assumptions about anything, but an assumption that back then that if you're making a film, the people in front of the camera have to be Americans. I just thought the way they spoke and the way that sound emanates to me just seemed better on film, better for film. On a stage, maybe an English accent might be better. I mean, I'm not suggesting what's what I think now, and that I'm not suggesting that I wouldn't like to go to a different place, you know, and make a film there. I'm just saying that was my intention. That's why I moved here.
Well, any number of directors have, and foreign directors like Alfred Hitchcock, Billy Wilder, Fritz Lang, have made some of the most American movies ever made. You have to wonder whether there isn't something that an outsider brings. Perhaps people know more about America when they come here than an American might know if he was going to make films in Britain or in France or in Germany. But everybody seems to know what goes on in this country because American pop culture is just so ubiquitous. You grew up, I'm sure, with American pop songs and American movies and American television shows.
Yeah, exactly. From the 50s, growing up in the 50s, that's exactly what I was weaned on. I looked at that place on the TV, on the little brown sort of TV set, I looked around where I was, and I thought, actually, even before I knew I was interested in wanted to become a filmmaker, I thought I think I would probably rather be there than here.
So, my guess is Tony Kaye, whose documentary Lake of Fire is perhaps the most stunning film ever made about abortion, at a time when there are a number of films about abortion. One of the most heralded films of the upcoming New York Film Festival is 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days about the problems a pregnant college student and a roommate face in arranging an illegal abortion during the last days of the Romanian communist state. But and in this film, which, by the way, opens today at the Film Forum, you follow a woman who's having an abortion, but you also give us one of the most shocking scenes I've ever seen. If people who are pro-choice feel happy about the thing that you did with the woman who was seeking an abortion, they will be very upset about the abortion, the late-term abortion that you have shown here in complete detail. It's really one of the most upsetting things I've ever seen in the movies. That was your idea to balance? It's almost like you're making the case for one side, then you make the case for the other side, and then you make the case for the other side, and you keep on going back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only way I thought I could sort of do it, very happy to be listening to someone with a pro-choice argument, and very happy to be listening to someone with a pro-life argument. With the abortion scene that you're talking about, there's a great irony there, that it's a very, you know, well-balanced and well-educated doctor, pro-choice doctor, who's talking about the procedure after he's, you know, after one sees, you know, well, after one sees what he did. Actually, there's a great sense of irony there. It's not like in a pro-life propagandist film, for example, the hard truth that we show a little bit in Lake of Fire of. It's not like there's a pro-life person talking about an abortion. This is quite an interesting thing. This is a pro-choice person talking about an abortion. So you actually see the abortion. So I think that that's why I think probably largely why that scene has the power that it does. The sort of horror, and no one can not be shocked at the scene. I think the shocking nature of the scene is that it is being said that in a way that I completely agree 100% that the purpose of this last 15 minutes was to allow this woman this girl to get on with her life and not have to worry about bringing up a child, which in the realm she is currently in, she can't.
And, but we get to watch these fetal parts.
But you see an abortion take place where the girl is pregnant, is in her 20th week, and it's after I've shot the scene, I was in an altered state. Another good thing why it's in black and white. It's like that makes it a lot easier to watch. I think if it was in color, it would be impossible to watch.
Now you've named the film Lake of Fire. That's because one of the religiously informed pro-lifers, was it Michael Griffin or was it Paul Hill who talked about? I guess it was Paul Hill who talked about people who perform abortions spending eternity in a lake of fire in hell. He also says that anyone who says "God damn it" will be condemned to eternal suffering in hell. So he represents the extreme, and there are a number of people who seem to be rather extreme. Randall Terry, very famous founder of Operation Rescue, makes some homophobic remarks along with his criticisms of the right to an abortion. Were you stunned by how open some of these people were?
Well, I think everyone was very happy to talk. I mean, people. I mean, you know full well you're doing a radio show. You're talking to people all day. You're recording. I mean, this is the sort of talking is.
People want to explain their positions.
People want to talk. You know, I think most people do like the sound of their own voice. I mean, whether or not they like the sound of their own voice, if it's recorded and they hear it back. But I certainly think most people like the sound of their voice when they're actually kind of saying it. And great, because you should like the sound of your own voice. It would be an awful thing if you didn't. I mean, because it's a great blessing to have the privilege of, you know, being allowed to talk. So, I'm very respectful to, you know, I when I interview, I have a very unintrusive style. I hardly say anything, and I think people were abortion is something that most people have something to say on the subject. Whether or not they will say it is, you know, is another thing. There's no disrespect to someone who rather keep their views private about the issue, but everyone was very happy to you know, I told them what I was doing, and I said I'm not going to alter what you say, I'm not going to put it out of context, I'm not going to edit it in a way that changes the meaning. So, you know,
and you have a fair number of talking heads here: Noam Chomsky, Francis Kissling, who is a Catholic pro-choice person, Nat Hentoff, who is not religious but is very strongly opposed to abortion. And you have Alan Dershowitz, who says everybody is right. How can that be?
Well, I said that's my take on it, actually. And I said that was a question. I said to Alan, you know, who I'm a massive fan of, I said, you know, don't you think in this issue that everybody is right? And then Alan just answered with the great story about the rabbi and the rabbinical student, and telling the rabbinical student that about a husband and wife who were splitting up, and they were both telling the rabbi the story, and the husband said, you know, had one story, and the rabbi said, yes, you're absolutely right, and then the wife told the rabbi the other side of the story, and he told her, yes, you're absolutely right. And then the rabbinical student said, but how can they both be right? And the rabbi said, you're absolutely right. Which is a great, I mean, and that's why, honestly, I mean, in my opinion, that's why it's why some people that are not, you know, that are not in control of themselves, the argument becomes so heated and so impossible to solve that they go out and kill.
Was that part of the appeal for you? Because I don't want to get into great detail, and we don't have a heck of a lot of time, but over the years you have not always been in control of yourself, and you have made a fair number of enemies. Now you seem to have smoothed some of that over, but you cause yourself a lot of trouble. You're one of these people who's constantly shooting himself in the foot.
Yeah. That wasn't the reason. I don't think that wasn't the reason that, or maybe it was. Maybe that was what sort of drew me to it. You know, in the first place. I don't know. Say that again.
Just wondering whether people getting so heated and at times really even losing control because they're to the point where in a couple of cases people have killed, more than a couple of cases, people have killed over this. Yeah. You would have thought to save lives, the last thing you'd want to do is kill.
Yeah.
Whether the emotional, the powerful emotions that are expressed is something that you might have connected to.
Yeah. Well, I understand reactive behavior. I suffered, you know, and shot myself in more places than my foot with my reactive behavior. Fortunately, I've never, you know, thank God, I've never harmed anybody other than myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can. I certainly have learned that, you know, you can't. If you lead a reactive life, it's gonna. You're not going to wind up in a good place.
Still, you must be very happy, despite your concerns about the final edit, to know that American History X is number 16 on the best dramas of all time list on the Internet Movie Database. It's become a cult film, and now there is a new one, plus more documentaries?
Well, Humpty Dumpty is a film that New Line are going to be releasing of mine next year.
Which is about the fight you had
New Line. When I went to the Toronto Film Festival in 98 to have the film pulled from the festival because it wasn't exactly my cut. There'd been 15 minutes of additional footage put in there. Seems insane now that I should even get annoyed. I ought to have been happy that they wanted to put more stuff in there. I thought I'll take my camera with and I'll shoot myself behaving like a complete idiot, you know, and
insisting that you change your name to Humpty Dumpty.
I had the film ripped from the festival, and that was the beginning of, I think, if it was the biggest argument, it probably wasn't, but I mean it certainly, in as far as the media is concerned, it was the most documented, it became the most publicized studio director battle over a cut, you know, in the history of the town. And I showed, New Line approached me a couple of years ago, and they said to me that there'd been a demand that they felt could be of, you know, make business sense to do a director's cut of American History X. And I said to, very happy to get their call, and I said to them, well, that would be cool, yeah, I'd be into that. And I said, but I've been making this other film, will you have a look at it? And they liked it, and they thought it was very funny. I mean, it's a tragic film. I mean, it's embarrassing.
So you're
going to
put the two together.
Well, they're
going to
give me a theatrical release on Humpty Dumpty, and that will serve as an advertisement for the DVD, which is a remastered American History X, digitally remastered with the other film in there as well.
Just one more thing.
Cool.
Blackwater Transit, the other film that we were talking about, featuring Samuel L. Jackson. When will that be coming out?
Well, Sam unfortunately...
He didn't do it, finally.
He had a medical situation that he had to deal with at the last minute. So Lawrence Fishburne
did a pretty good substitution.
Did a phenomenal job
actor.
In his place, yeah.
And that's coming out, you don't know?
Well, I've got to finish it by April, and I will finish it by April.
We have Lake of Fire, which opens today at the Film Forum. Thank you so much for being with us, Tony Kaye. This is WNYC in New York and WNYC.org. We're also heard on satellite.